Welcome back to Maritime Morning. You recognize that theme? Vaguely? It is a bit of a take on the Inspector Gadget theme there, which I think actually does have some classical implications to it as well. I don't know if we can explore all of that, but we are going to explore the idea that Inspector Gadget is making a return after 30 years. And it's the result of a change in the animation industry worldwide. One of the players that has been the impetus for that change is DHX Media. They're working with Teletoon to bring this back around again into the public domain after years and years of syndication and one reasonably successful movie. Inspector Gadget is going to reemerge as a property from DHX Media here in Halifax. Joining us to talk about this is supervising producer of this particular initiative and somebody who's got a pretty deep background in the animation industry. He's the supervising producer, Phil Stamp of DHX Media, joins us here this morning. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning, Jordy. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
This must be a lot of fun.
It is. It's great fun, actually.
I want to talk a little bit about you first, though, just because one of the things that DHX has done is it has become a gathering place for some enormous talent. And that's kind of exciting, I think, for filmmakers and for people who are involved in the industry here in Halifax. Tell me a little bit about your background. What got you in the cartoon business?
That's a great question. I think a lot of what got me into the cartoon business is a lot of what got a lot of my colleagues and coworkers into the business. In that, there are some people who spend thousands of dollars on therapy to get in touch with their inner child. And there are those of us who actually might need more help in getting in touch with their outer adult, in fact. So, I mean, there's a lot of us who are really big kids, and we grew up loving cartoons and still love cartoons. I grew up doing that and drawing a lot, spent a lot of hours drawing, and then sort of that tumbled into studying animation, and then in Ontario, and then getting into the industry there.
And you went on to work on some pretty remarkable stuff through your experience in animation. And I guess it's not all just drawing things on paper. It expanded into, you know, the digital world, some pretty exciting projects for you. Where did that take you in terms of your work?
I've sort of been fortunate enough to work across Canada in a number of the, you know, major cities in Canada. And as you say, you know, kind of in the early 90s, a lot of things changed. There was a lot of, you know, pencil and paper artists who had to change their milieu and become digital artists. And that was a little bit of a jump for a lot of people, but it was kind of, you know, a survival thing for people who really were still passionate about the industry. And so I was sort of lucky in that I got the opportunity to do that. That eventually did lead in the early or sort of mid 2000s to getting an opportunity to go to California and work for George Lucas, actually.
The natural next question is, so you worked on Star Wars?
I did do a little bit of work on that and on the Clone Wars animated series.
So much has changed in animation over the last number of years, and I think of what, you know, the contributions have been by Industrial Light and Magic and the work that they did, what Lucasfilms, you know, did in bringing, you know, all of that magic to life, Pixar Studios, and now, you know, animation, we're seeing features coming out regularly that are just, they're just eye candy. They're some of the most beautiful things that are available because you've all of the shackles have been pulled off of you. I mean, you're starting with more than a blank sheet. You're starting with a blank universe in three dimensions that you're able to work with now.
Well, you'd think so.
Well,
you still have a lot of constraints, actually. Just, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that it does require a lot of the same approach as working in any artistic medium, in any, you know, whether you're working in, you know,
but it feels like you're constantly stretching the boundaries in all three dimensions.
Well, you know what? When you have very, very deep pockets, you can do that. And certainly, George Lucas had pretty deep pockets for for the projects that he's had. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my take on it is always that it really does come back to the hands and minds of the artists who are behind it. You know, one of the really great things about Halifax and about the talent that's here is it's actually incredibly diverse. You have a lot of people here who are actors, singers, musicians, writers. Halifax has a long animation tradition doing things like stop motion animation, certainly traditional and other sort of new forms, and now really embracing the digital media, 3D animation being a part of that. And so, you know, I mean, while the sort of you would think the possibilities are limitless, I really do think it all boils back to the creativity of the minds that really are behind it.
Well, let's talk about Inspector Gadget a little bit. I mean, it's been around for it was 30 years ago, so I mean, it was even when I was youngish that this came out and first I guess came into everybody's consciousness. Was it one of those things that you liked us when you were younger? I have no idea. You're probably what, in your 40s or something?
Yeah.
So you were just a kid when Inspector Gadget came out. Is it one that stayed with you as a cartoon?
I mean, I think it's one of those fantastic properties that has stayed with a lot of people. I mean, even I think that when it came out, I was a little bit above the age group that it was targeted at. But of course, you know, the phrase "Go Go Gadget," whatever. Really was something that just became this ubiquitous thing. You go anywhere in the world, and even still to this day, 30 years after, you still hear people making reference to Inspector Gadget. It's just kind of one of those pop culture things that embedded itself and never really went away.
What was the origin of that particular, I mean, who was it that was responsible for Inspector Gadget back in the beginning?
There was a few people responsible for it. Initially, I'm pretty sure that it was a co-production between Canada and France. The man credited with creating it is a guy named Jean Chalopin, who's a French guy and phenomenally, incredibly nice guy. He mm-hmm. actually came here recently to visit us and kind of give us his blessing for us taking on carrying the torch of his creation.
What I recall from it, there was a certain sense of independence about it as an entity, but this is, you know, it was post Warner Brothers, it wasn't a Hanna-Barbera, it was, you know, it was something that was sort of outside of the regular realm of cartoons that, you know, the Flintstones and all the rest of it that, you know, we grew up with, and was unique in that way. It has gone on subsequent to become a worldwide syndicated, what'd you call it? It's been a bit of an entity, I guess, that's been out there for this length of time. Why take that property versus, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of others that you could perhaps have re-engaged on? Why take the Inspector Gadget property and decide that that's the one that you want to resurrect?
Well, it's an interesting question. Back last year, DHX, which is really now the largest, has the largest library of intellectual property of any independent producer of animation and kids programming. Back last year, DHX acquired the library of another great Canadian studio called Cookie Jar. Mm-hmm. And when those companies came together, Cookie Jar was actually the company that had owned Inspector Gadget for a long time, and so then that became the property of DHX. And there were a few of us within the company who, when we realized that was something that we now had under our creative influence, shall we say, we really thought that could be something that would be a lot of fun to take a swing at and bring, you know, breathe new life into it.
I suspect that when I was looking at some of the YouTube videos of the Inspector Gadget, the original Inspector Gadget, you look at that compared to today's, you know, the technology that's available and just in terms of the clarity of picture, for that matter. I mean, you know, it was made for color television back when, you know, there wasn't even any thinking of what high definition television was about. So you look at that, and you're saying, okay, what are we going to rebuild it in the same image? Do we make it a more contemporary ethos around it? When you resurrect something like that, what is it that you're doing beyond simply, you know, recrafting the frames?
I mean, I think it's like, you know, so many traditions of storytelling. You know, you have, you know, so many people who will take a classic story and retell it over and over and over again, and the stories that always stick in sort of the public psyche, these stories, things like Romeo and Juliet, for example, people have it in their minds as a great classic story, and oftentimes people think, you know, they have it in their minds, but they don't necessarily know the details. And so the great thing about Inspector Gadget, not that it's Shakespeare by any stretch of the imagination, but the great thing about something like Inspector Gadget is that so many people have these fond memories of it being, you know, fun and funny, that it was, you know, just something that made them feel good and laugh.
Yeah.
And if you go back and you look at it, as you say, you know, the so many of the things in the technology and the capacity for creating beautiful images for high definition viewing, you know, things have changed, and you know, people's sensibilities have changed. So, you know, you kind of go back and you look at it and you remember it being quite funny, but possibly some of the jokes from, you know, the early 80s are not quite as funny as they could be now, and some of the capabilities for doing you know, really funny animation or making a really, really high energy funny show that you couldn't have done then that we actually can do now are there. So what we can do is we can take, you know, being incredibly respectful to the property, and even like I said, Jean Chalopin came and we discussed it for days with him about the things that made it memorable and great.
Really?
Yeah, and how we can then take it and make it new without, you know, tarnishing or treading on the things that actually made it likable and lovable.
Well, it would kind of, in some ways, I think that there would be some trepidation in doing this. Okay. And as you said, it's not Shakespeare, but there's going to be trepidation in the same way that you would say, okay, you know, I'm going to redo Huckleberry Hound.
Yeah.
You know, that as somebody who grows up and sees that, you know, and that was something that was a part of their past. And, you know, there is a quality about it that it will always have as the original, that you know, coming back and rebuilding somebody's painting is what you're doing. Because it is an art form, and it has to be, I think, seen as an art form. That there must be some trepidation on your part about actually getting your fingers into that thing, as exciting
absolutely.
As it is.
No, absolutely. And you know, you sort of sit back and wait for the countless internet trolls to weigh in on their thoughts on how terrible it is that we're going to do it in 3D and all this kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, we talk to a lot of kids studying animation, both here in Halifax as well as elsewhere. Students, people studying animation, and they, you know, they weren't even born when Inspector Gadget came on TV, and yet they know about it, and they have this kind of what seems like a love for it at a cellular level. I don't really understand it, but when they found out that we were going to be doing it as a, you know, doing it new and doing it in 3D, the level of excitement was really through the roof. So, you know, there is a certain trepidation to taking this well-loved, highly known property and then trying to sort of take it and go, well, we're going to do it again. And I think a big part of it is not sort of saying we're going to do it better, because I don't think you can say that. And I don't think you can say that and be respectful. All we can really do is say that, well, we're going to do a version of it. And this version of it is going to be our version of it, and we're going to do it as good as we can do it and really try and make people love it and make people laugh and be hopefully as entertained by it as they were by the original.
Philip Stamp is the supervising producer of Inspector Gadget, which is being recreated or resurrected, or some term, I guess, when you're rebuilding an animated series like that by DHX Media here in Halifax. I want to talk a little bit about the environment for animation here in Halifax and what we can expect in the future and what sort of impact it's having on a global scale. We'll talk about that and we continue with our Go Gadget next here on Maritime Morning. Welcome back to Maritime Morning. I'm Jordy Morgan. We are talking about Inspector Gadget. And no, this is not the the new theme. I actually found this morning on YouTube. On our little Vimeo piece. And it was a comparison between Inspector Gadget and a classical piece, Hall of the Mountain King, which is, I believe, Grieg.
Yes.
And one of the things that that I thought was interesting about playing that versus the old theme is that very often there are components of animated features that you might find that are, you know, highly sophisticated and are interesting, you know, in terms of their interpretations of different things, whether it be the music. And I mean, you could find it in the old Warner Brothers, you know, the Bugs Bunny series, if you're looking for it as an adult. And I've often wondered about animators because, you know, I remember watching some of the some of the old Warner Brothers ones and saying, "What are those guys taking?" Or some of the Walt Disney stuff. And there's while they look like they're designed for children, that there is, you know, there's a lot of intellectual capital that's being used up in building this stuff, and a lot, you know, a lot, not the stuff that's hidden, but there's, as you get older, you learn to appreciate the different components of that. And as an animator, and when you're building this kind of stuff, is that something that you're cognizant of, or is it something that just happens? I mean, do you insert that kind of stuff for the adults who are looking for it?
I mean, I think that you kind of try from time to time, you know, and there's a certain, I think a lot of animators by nature are a little bit subversive, you know. I think a lot of animators, certainly not all, but I think there's a lot of animators who, you know, might have spent a little bit of time in the back of the classroom doodling and not necessarily paying attention. And so I think that sometimes there's a bit of a subversive nature to that. So, I mean, you know, there's checks and balances, and you have to make sure, particularly when you're the supervising producer, that when things go to broadcast, you're not going to offend anybody. But yeah, you know, I think there's often a conscious effort to try and slip those things in.
I want to talk about the DHX as an entity here in Halifax. I mean, it is a big deal now globally, isn't it? You're a big player.
Absolutely.
Well, on what sort of scale would you? I mean, are you at the Warner Brothers Animation scale, or is that, or is it even bigger than that?
In some ways, it's even bigger, but it sort of depends on who you're, you know, who you're set, who you're running against, kind mm-hmm. of thing. And so, I mean, you know, in the feature film space, we're certainly not, you know, competing with, you know, with Pixar or DreamWorks or Blue Sky or those entities. Because those are feature film producers. But, you know, if we want to compare ourselves to, you know, people like Disney for their television animation and, you know, pretty much any television entity in the world, we're one of the biggest, if not the biggest. And I mean, you know, I love working in television. I really do. I think that in fact, television affords an opportunity to be even more directly creative and to fine tune a lot of your skills even more than working on feature films. You get a lot of feature films where you'll have anywhere from 3 to 5 years to produce an 85-minute piece of animation, whereas in television you usually have about 18 months to produce 9.5 hours. So it's a lot more intense, and you have to sort of you have to be a lot more I would say quick on your feet, and really you got to know when you're asking for something that you're asking for the right thing.
I ask about the size of DHX because, you know, when we talk about industrial or economic growth here, we talk, you know, we flip over to the shipyard deal and, you know, talk about the, you know, the great benefit that that's going to be to Halifax or whatever, you know, whatever other mega project that happens to be going on or how we're dealing with it. And I'm wondering about this as an industrial growth base, if you will, in this industry here. I'm not, you know, suggesting that we're the next Hollywood for animation, but could we, you know, with a company this size and a company this influential in the world, could Halifax become a center like that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's a fantastic question because, I mean, you know, when you talk about the quote unquote Hollywood or, you know, type of animation, this is a global industry, and I really use the word industry quite deliberately because it is business, and it's big business. And while I started my own career as an artist, over time I had to learn it as a business, and, you know, because you're talking about multi-million dollar projects.
Are there opportunities for young Nova Scotians, you think, in this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we in the past year, both myself and my colleagues have gone to a couple of the schools, you know, in and around Halifax and outside of Halifax to you know, meet people, meet kids who, for whom this is a dream for them, and sort of let them know that, you know, there's opportunities, and that that Halifax certainly is a place where they can look for a future in this industry. And it is, I mean, you know, like you say, a lot of people talk about the shipping contracts, and these are fantastic. But sort of by comparison, the animation industry is as big, and certainly as big for Halifax. The potential here for economic growth, for jobs, is huge. I mean, at the moment, we're sort of coming down off of an 18-month production, which was a pretty big deal. It was a co-production with the Jim Henson Company, who are in Hollywood. And almost all of the creatives for that show were based here in Halifax. So we had a lot of very high-end influence on that project with those quote-unquote Hollywood partners. And that show at its peak had just about 100 employees. Now, that was one show. One of the things that DHX Media is looking to do is actually grow to triple in size. So we were talking about hundreds of employees. And we're not alone in this. You know, I mean, there's other studios locally as well. People who I'm in touch with on a regular basis, mm-hmm. who are also doing fantastic work in the city, who also employ hundreds of people. So it's big business.
Phil, I could talk about this all day, but I'm afraid that we've run out of time. Half an hour goes by in a hurry.
Sure does.
One quick question. Favorite cartoon of all time?
Oh, Bugs Bunny, unquestionably.
Good. We're on the same page. Well, overture, curtains, lights, we're done. This Thanks very much. Great talking to you.
Thanks.
All
talking
right.
To you too.
That is Phil Stamp from DHX Media. And be looking for the new Inspector Gadget coming out to a TV near you. Coming up in the next couple of minutes, would you like to be going down to another province in the Caribbean, in the Turks and Caicos? It's Peter Goldring's dream. We'll talk about that next on Maritime Morning.